FarmingtonFarm.com.
Number one for breaking news for Vernon, Farmington, and South Windsor, the talk of Connecticut, AM 1360 and FM 103.3.
I don't know when it was the last time that we had our first guest this morning. Here, but was it about a month ago, 2 months ago?
It's about 6 weeks ago.
Okay, so roughly a month and a half. Yeah. Good morning, it's Gary Byron, 10 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock. Our first guest into the Daily Connerton Memorial Company interview chair is the former independent candidate for the 3rd Congressional District here in Connecticut. I say former candidate because 6 weeks ago, correct me if I'm wrong, she was the candidate, right?
Was going to be,
Okay. But instead, she has chosen not to run. Instead, going to advise who the new candidate is, who she actually thinks has a real chance to flip New Haven. Now, also, if I remember correctly, you said it was 6 weeks ago.
Yep.
After her appearance here, there were people who called into the show immediately when it went to open phones right after her interview. And they said, we loved her. She's great. But she's crazy if she thinks she's going to flip New Haven to being red. So we'll find out the bottom of that. All right, let's welcome back to the show Dr. Amy Chai. Good morning, Doc. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me back on.
Well, thanks for coming back on. Boy, you must have had so much of a great time 6 weeks ago. You said, hey, I think I'll subject myself to that torture again.
Well, you guys are always fun to talk to. Wow. So I love it.
Oh, golly. All right. So I'm going to reiterate something I just said prior to you coming on. So in your last appearance here, apparently it was 6 weeks ago, you had said something. And by the way, you got rave reviews from listeners. But I remember this. There were a few that kind of thought that she's a little crazy if she thinks that she's going to turn New Haven red. So I got to ask you first right out of the chute here. Why? Why do you really believe that this is possible?
Because the candidate who is running in New Haven is from the hood.
What's that?
He's from the hood.
Okay.
And he has a lot of following in New Haven. He's a well-known businessman there. He has a history of being, you know, running with gangs. He is New Haven.
Well, first of all, is this the incumbent?
No. He is not the incumbent.
All right, so who's the incumbent right now? I don't recall correctly who this person is in New Haven.
He basically is a newcomer.
We have Rosa DeLauro.
Rosa DeLauro is the incumbent, of course.
Yeah, I know. Okay, so I'm sorry. I wasn't wondering who is this person that you're referring to, though?
The person I'm referring to is a man named Michael Massey. When I went to the Republican Party.
Wait. I'm confused. After... He Michael Massey's from the hood? No.
Absolutely.
Is he?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
You didn't know?
No, I didn't know.
Yeah.
Okay, yes. Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
Yes, he owns a place called Black Corner. And whenever Elicker wants to go and act like he cares about black people, he'll go get a photo op at Black Corner with Michael Massey. And Michael Massey is an America first conservative Republican, and he wants to get something started called the Urban Republican Movement.
The Urban Republican what?
Movement.
Movement, okay.
Yeah. And he is sick of how Democrat policies are destroying the black family and incentivizing failure. And he wants to build up families and build up education And one of the ways he wants to do that is to take apart the Department of Education and reward parents for making sure their kids learn and get to school and stay out of trouble. It's a direct reward to parents for being good parents. And he also wants to financially incentivize marriage. And
financially incentivize?
And women.
By what means? I don't even know what that means. Financially? So in other words, you're going to pay somebody to get married?
By, you know how they incentivize people to not work?
Okay,
the Democrats
right. Yeah.
incentivize people to not work by giving them money to not work.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, you can use money to incentivize marriage and success and parenting. And I helped him to do the math. And for every $1, for example, that you would incentivize parents to raise their kids to attend school and get A's, you could potentially save $5 for every $1. And that doesn't even include the taxes that you could get from people who are actually working and not draining off the system. So that's one of his key pieces of legislation. The other thing he's interested in is closing the border, stopping sexual propaganda in schools, stopping spending all of our money in Ukraine. And basically, he is signing the Vivek's America First Pledge.
Okay, so... Sounds like a good Republican, but that's not really the question. The question is, how is he going to win the 3rd congressional district?
Well, he has to get the message to voters in New Haven, because the Republicans, I think, out in the community are going to stick with Republican, especially if you have a solid conservative candidate.
Mm-hmm.
But the people in New Haven, about 60% of them haven't wanted to vote because they're sick of the Democrats, but they haven't been willing to vote for Republicans because they think Republicans are racist. And they have to hear him talking about how Republicans are not racist. And, I think that's a good message, and it could really change how the urban communities think about the Republican Party.
Are you saying he's African American?
Yes. He's a former gangbanger, really. And everyone in the neighborhood was involved in either selling drugs or using drugs.
And that's going to attract the New Haven voter. But what about the voters in the other parts of the 3rd District? You think that that's an attractive quality to have if you're a voter, you know, in Brantford or, you know, some of these other towns in that area? Are they sitting there going, yeah, I want to go for this former gangbanger?
I think they will when they meet him, actually. He's a very personable guy. I've watched him interact with people at RTCs.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes across as extremely, personable. And, you know, he's now a dad, a store owner, and he really wants to change. He wants to change the community, the culture. And I think that's a very powerful message that conservatives understand.
Mm. How is his fundraising going?
Well, right now he's been fundraising mostly in New Haven.
Okay.
So he hasn't been attracting the big dollar donors. So that is a problem, but that's always been a problem for, you know, ordinary people candidates. And I think we have a kind of a split in the Republican Party in that, like, half of the party is very patriotic America First. And then there's still kind of an old guard who is more fiscal, like corporate, or if you will. So, and that's a problem going, I think, across the country.
They're what's wrong with being fiscal? You'd say fiscally conservative?
No, there's a difference between being fiscally conservative and being a corporate sponsored person.
Like the establishment, or?
Yeah, the establishment. There's not a good way to say it. People that take a lot of money from the corporate donors, and then they're kind of beholden to doing what the corporate masters say instead of what's good for the American people.
Well, listen, I can tell you Rosa DeLauro's, you know, she's been in office, it seems like, forever. And I don't think, you know, in New Haven is none the better for it. There's no doubt in my mind that we need, a candidate that can solve a lot of their congressional issues. A couple of things scares me. You know what? Joe, can we get him on?
Michael Massey, yeah, we'll get him on.
His name is Michael Massey. Get him on. I want to talk to him. I want the listeners to hear him.
He has an interesting story.
Well, yeah, and I'll let him tell it, and we'll get him on. If there's a spot this week, you think we can?
Yeah, we can get him on before the week's out. I got a couple openings Thursday, Friday.
Good. We'll work on getting him on. Is this what caused you? Because the last time that I had you on, you were running for the 3rd Congressional District. And what changed your mind? That's a pretty bold move to just eliminate, you know, get out of the campaign.
Because I feel like it's not about me, and it's never been about me. It's been about how can people win.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that people still think I'm a communist because there were people in the media paid to say that I was a communist last time.
I never heard so that. Yeah. Why would you be a communist if you're you're endorsing? Go ahead.
Because I was with the Independent Party, there were people in the Republican Party that basically told people in the RTCs that I was a communist who was in the race to unseat Leslie DeNardis and ruin her campaign.
All right.
Which was completely a lie, but it's hard to overcome that. And the other thing is, I didn't want to be in some sort of a knockdown dragout when they already had two people running. I didn't think it was going to work.
Did he just enter the race, or was he part of the – did he receive the Republican endorsement back when you were on with us a month and a half ago?
No. I mean, there's still two people running. There's him, and there's a Hispanic gentleman.
And what party is he with?
He's also a Republican. Oh. There's two people running for the Republican nomination.
Well, that's pretty good. Look at that. They're saying that Republicans are a bunch of old, rich, white dudes. And I'm talking to somebody who's just told me that there's two people that want to take on Rosa DeLauro, an old, rich, right, white woman, and one's Hispanic and one's black. Look at that. Hey, I got to take a break right here. We're going to come right back more with Dr. Amy Chai right after this. Stay there.
Sometimes I struggle to get to sleep. My body stopped for the day, but my mind is still running. So I take ZzzQuil.
ZzzQuil, the world's number one sleep aid brand, has a range of non-habit-forming products to fit you and your family's needs. Invest in a great night's sleep for the best you tomorrow.
I'm awake and ready to take on anything.
Better days start with ZzzQuil Nights. Explore our products at ZzzQuil.com.
Use as directed. Keep out of reach of children.
Join Superior Products Distributors for the official grand opening celebration at their new Seymour location, April 17th and 18th from 7 a.m. to 2 p.m. Superior is Connecticut's premier contractor's one-stop location for hardscape and landscape materials, job site equipment, site products, and masonry, and concrete supplies. Join the celebration for special pricing, manufacturer reps, live demos, a food truck on site, free raffles, and giveaways. 600 Derby Avenue, Seymour, Wednesday and Thursday. See you
Never
there.
A dull moment. The Talk in Connecticut, 103.3 and 104.5, wants your opinion. Call 860-243-1360.
24 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock, we're talking with Dr. Amy Chai, a former independent candidate for the 3rd Congressional District. And for those of you playing along at home who get confused, well, what's the 1st District? Who's in the 2nd? 1st District is John Larson. All right. I think we have that. 2nd District is Joe Courtney. 3rd District is Rosa DeLauro. 4th District is Jim Himes. In the 5th district is Johanna Hayes. So those of you who are keeping track at home, she's taken herself out of running for the 3rd Congressional District. Remember, last time we chatted with her, she was an independent candidate. She has now decided to endorse the Republican, or one of the two Republican candidates, Michael Massey. You know, there was something that you said a moment ago, Amy, and I couldn't agree with you more. The schools in New Haven are a disaster. Matter of fact, I remember talking to Gwen Samuel from Vote for the Other Guy. I know you're familiar with her. Do you think that could be one of the keys to winning the 3rd Congressional District? I mean, I know it's not just New Haven, but it's a big city. It's the big, you know, it's the big city in that district.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah, New Haven and Middletown are really the big cities to win in the 3rd district. And there's a lot of dissatisfaction with the Democrat Party in New Haven. There's really a split in there politically.
They don't like Rosa?
They don't like Rosa. They don't like the Democrats, and they're not voting. It's been the lowest turnout ever in 2022.
Wow.
The black people aren't voting because they think the Democrats are doing nothing for them.
Well, they're
but
right.
They won't vote Republican because they think Republicans are racist.
You know, I find that fascinating because how many more Republicans, how many more African-Americans need to run in the Republican ticket, you know, for them to be convinced that the Republicans are obviously not racist? I mean, every time I turn around, there's a new black Republican candidate, which I think is great. But I mean, if I'm just an African American voter, why would you still be thinking that Republicans are racist? Unless this new, it doesn't even make sense.
And that's why a person who actually comes from the hood is such a good way to get through to people, and he's got a good following. There's a lot of people who really like him and his ideas. And he is very well known in the black community in New Haven. And I think that you can't win without New Haven in CT3.
No, you're probably right. How's he going to get the other non-black voters that are in the entire 3rd Congressional District to get excited for him and vote for him?
Well, that's where I hope that I can come in and help him out, because, you know, he does have that sort of accent that sometimes is a little hard to understand for people. So it helps if
accent.
I can kind of introduce him.
Are you talking about the Hispanic candidate, or you're talking about the African-American candidate?
The black candidate has a little bit of an accent, so you
from?
Have to listen a little bit more carefully to him.
Where's he from?
He's from New Haven City.
Well, what kind of an accent does he have?
An urban accent.
Oh, an urban accent. Okay.
Yes.
All right. All right.
And, you know, he comes from a single mom who had her first child at 14.
Wow.
And he slept 3 in the same bed. And his dad was addicted to drugs. And he lived that life that the Democrats have created in big cities. He's lived it. He knows what it is. And he is angry about it, just like many black people are angry about it.
All right. We got to get him on. I can't wait to talk to him.
We'll lock it in. I'll make it happen.
You're going to make it happen before the
weekend?
Okay, good. Yeah, no, I'd like to. I mean, I appreciate you informing us of him. I'm not that familiar with him. Has he ever run for office in the past? that you're aware of?
He has not run. No, he has not run for office. He built himself up from zero.
Okay.
And he's written 3 books. And so I just think that this is a very unique time, a very unique opportunity to broaden the tent with a lot of black people are quite conservative.
Well, I don't know about that, but I do.
They really are.
I know a lot of Latinos are conservative. I know that this, you did say something that I wholeheartedly agree with. We do need to broaden the tent. And again, I'm looking forward to getting him on and interviewing him, getting everybody familiar with him, getting to know him, and he can share his story. In the meantime, Amy, thank you for bringing us to his attention, or him to our attention, and good luck in working on his campaign. Thanks for being with us this morning.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
You got it. I know very little about this gentleman.
We'll meet him.
And then there's somebody else that's running, too.
We'll meet him, too.
Wait, look, two non-white Republicans.
Sponsored by
New Haven.
Number one news for Vernon, Farmington, and South Windsor. The talk of Connecticut. AM 1360 and FM 103.3.
It had just occurred to me. Last hour, we had Dr. Chai, right?
Yep.
Okay. So this hour, we've got another doctor.
Doctors in the house,
well,
baby.
No. Oh, like a week. Was it a week? I don't know. Recently. We had a day that we had like all doctors.
It was all doctors. And some of the doctors were also congressional candidates, which was kind of neat.
Look at that.
Yeah. I like to theme it out.
I like it. Sure. Let's keep it running. Our next guest. Oh, by the way, it is Gary Byron, 8:11 here on this tax day, Monday morning, the 15th of April. Our next guest into the Daily Connerton Memorial Company interview chair serves on the public health. I would hope he would. He's a doctor. He should probably be the ranking member on that. I know there's a Dr. Anwar that's a Democrat.
Yep.
He's probably the chair because he's a Democrat, so, and he got the majority, so. He's also on Public Safety and Security, as well as the Appropriations Committee. He's the ranking member on of Veterans and Military Affairs. All right. It's good. The doctor is in. Let's welcome back to the show State Senator Dr. Jeff Gordon. Jeff, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Oh, hey. I am Ducky. How are you?
I'm doing fine, even though it's tax day.
Please don't tell me that you waited until the last minute to get your taxes done.
No, I didn't. I got them in, but okay. It's painful no matter what day you do the taxes.
Oh, I know. But listen, in this state, are you kidding me? Let me ask you. You're back in session today, right?
We're back in Wednesday and Thursday, but there's various committee meetings still happening.
I thought, aren't all the bills JF'd already?
Yes, but some of the bills are now being referred to other committees.
Okay,
example, Appropriations is still meeting, and I have a Public Health Committee meeting on a couple of referred bills today.
Okay, so you hit the chamber, you said, on Wednesday?
Yeah, we went in, Senate was in last week, and I believe the House is going in this week, and the Senate's back this week.
Okay, all right, so there we go. I knew you guys were... I don't know. Okay, so it's not today, but you're going back in this week. All right, so let me just start off with this, because there's a few things that I want to go over when it comes to the Appropriations Committee and so on and so forth. You're running for re-election, right?
Yes, I am.
All right. I just wanted to make sure about that. And you serve on Appropriations. On Friday, you and the Republicans voted no on the 4.5% pay raises for state employee unions. All right, let's start with that. Talk about that first. Because our listener, let me tell you, I'm not getting a 4.5% raise. Joe, are you getting a 4.5%?
I don't believe so.
Okay, I don't know if anybody else in the private sector is getting a 4.5% raise. But yeah, talk about that vote. Talk about that bill, please.
Well, I spent a lot of time looking into this bill, and first and foremost, my Republican colleagues and I appreciate the work that state employees do,
mm-hmm.
but my no vote was because of two things. One is we don't know how we're going to pay for this all, and in fact, it's going to create a bigger hole for UConn at least $70 million more that the state doesn't know how it's going to pay for, other than perhaps upping tuition even more on students. And the other reason I voted no was it was a very bad process. We got 1 hour before the meeting financial information from the Office of Fiscal Analysis, 1 hour before. And even then, that was preliminary, not fully detailed. And it was recognized that there were a lot of unanswered questions, including many questions by Democrats were not fully answered. And we were told, well, with not the full information, without all of our questions answered, vote. And then later, when it comes to the Senate and the House, we'll get more information and more of our answers. And that's a very bad process. In fact, Office of Fiscal Analysis couldn't even complete its work to give us numbers, budget numbers, until the day before when I looked into things. So this was really a rushed job, a political agenda, and not the right way for us to be understanding what this contract renegotiation is going to do on the budget, for example, on UConn, and then how do we pay for it in future years? None of those questions were answered. And so because of the bad process and the lack of really good understanding of numbers that we didn't get, I had a vote no in the committee, and I hope we can get more information when it comes to the House and the Senate. But
I remember having to take similar votes. And one time, I mean, one time I voted no on a bill that I probably would have voted yes on. And I remember, I wish I could remember what it was. But I remember my constituents going to me. I had like a town hall, meeting with constituents. And, you know, somebody had raised their hand and they said, you know, Representative Byron, why did you vote no on such and such bill? And I told them the reason why I voted, because I read it, you know, I read it after, like later on, and it turned out to be a pretty darn good bill. You know, I mean, there's a couple things in there I didn't like, but, you know, I didn't write it. The other party wrote it, but I could have lived with or you know, added an amendment maybe I remember saying the reason why I voted no was because we got the bill, you know, just prior to voting on it. You know, I didn't sit on that committee, so I wasn't that familiar with it. I'm trying to hurry up and read testimony and read the language of the bill. Of course, it's multiple pages. And I'm like, I voted no because I'd rather vote no in answer to that than vote yes on something that's completely egregious and adds a fee or a tax or whatever. You know, I figured a no vote was a lot safer. Now, in hindsight, it turned out to be okay and a pretty good bill, actually, and I would have voted yes. And my constituent got upset, but not at me, but at the process of, well, why are the Democrats showing you a bill an hour prior to you having to vote on it? And I say, well, that's a question you'd have to ask them. That's the golden question. We'd all like to know the answer to that.
Oh, absolutely. And that was part of why I voted no on this bill, because it was rushed. We didn't have all of the budget data that we needed. And we also didn't have answers to many important questions that my Republican colleagues and I asked, but also many Democrats asked. So how can you vote on a bill like that that's rushed through with a bad process? That's not the right way to govern. And the people that I represent don't like that process at all.
My constituents that I represent didn't like that at all neither, as I was just saying. Speaking of the Appropriations Committee, Doc, there's a lot of controversy about a woke Democrat versus not so woke Democrat dust up last week about the term expectant mothers versus, let's say, pregnant person or even pregnant fathers. I don't know what the hell that means. And you're a doctor. Maybe you can explain to me what a pregnant father is, because you're the one with the medical degree, not me. It just sounds bizarre, you know. And I know, Jeff, maybe you can make sense of this. Help me out here.
Well, it was quite interesting, that meeting, and you're right, I was there on the Appropriations Committee when this came up. As a doctor, the only person I know who can be pregnant is a biologic female. I don't know of anybody else who can be pregnant. Now, people may identify any way they wish, and that's certainly an argument we hear from our Democrats, especially the liberal Democrats, but Representative Porter and many others were raising the issue that if words matter, then we should also be recognizing expectant mothers, which is a term that many people use. And tell you my constituents readily understand who an expectant mother is as opposed to a pregnant person. The whole thing when Senator Marks brought up about pregnant father, that was just extremely weird and just shows that how off the rails this type of push with identity has gone. Let people identify as they wish, but we don't really need to run around changing the entire dictionary, especially when it comes to understanding who is actually pregnant. And again, biologic women are the ones who become pregnant, and that's never in question. And technically, that wasn't in question on the Appropriations Committee. It was all this, you know, pushback by some of the Democrats in their own party against some of this woke ideology that has just gone too far.
Is that woke, though? Or, I mean, this isn't, there's X chromosomes, Y chromosomes. I mean, you're a doctor. Did you ask the chair for, you know, a moment to clarify that, folks, I don't mean to be the bearer of bad news. I know I'm a Republican in this committee, and, you know, you're not going to agree with me, and there's a wokeness and we're not so wokeness. But I'm going to put politics aside. I'm going to speak to you not as state senator Jeff Gordon. I'm going to speak to you as Dr. Jeff Gordon, with a medical degree, with a wealth of experience under my belt, as a general practitioner for years. And I'm going to tell you this right now, as God is my witness, I'll put my hand up to him right now and tell you that men cannot get pregnant. I know some of the Democrats may be in complete shock, and you may hear this big sigh and this big gasp all at once. Because some of them, they believe men can give birth. I don't know how, but if you have you ever thought of doing that and just saying, listen, I'm a medical doctor. Let me just clear the air on this. Men cannot get pregnant. I can't believe we're even having this discussion, but be it as it may.
I was tempted, but at that point, there was enough of fighting between the Democrats that I didn't want to add fuel to the fire. And the other was, this was a fight on terminology about who could be pregnant and what to call them with words on a bill about children's mental health.
No.
So this is what happened with this, that went off the rails with this kind of political infighting on a bill that is purely about, you know, mental health that we should be supporting. I've had discussions as a doctor senator with a number of my colleagues in the legislature just on that point, which is biologic women are the one who become pregnant, and we have to keep that in mind, because as physicians, separate from however somebody identifies themselves, you still have that biology. And we have to take that into account, the anatomy, the biology, the physiology. So, again, this went off the rails and on a bill that was very simple that we all supported to help mental health in this state.
All right. Doc, stay right there. I got to take it's a very short break. It's about a minute long. When we come back, we're going to switch gears. I want to talk about Eversource. And I also want to talk about Veteran Affairs. Stay right there. More with State Senator and Dr. Jeff Gordon.
When shopping for appliances, where do you stop first? A big box store? They might be your first stop, but Ferrari's Appliance will be your last. From laundry to dishwashers, stoves to refrigerators, Ferrari's Appliance has all the name brands at the price you can afford. And they install and service everything they sell. Enough with the pushy salespeople and impersonal customer service. Head to Ferrari's Appliance in Newington or Naugatuck and discover why people from all over choose them over everyone else. Online at ferrarisappliance.com.
Pizza's here.
Oh, great. I'd love some, but I'm worried about my stomach issues.
If you're worried about having diarrhea, gas, bloating, stomach pain, or loose, oily stools, it may not just be stomach issues. It could be a condition called exocrine pancreatic insufficiency, or EPI. With EPI, the pancreas doesn't release enough enzymes to break down food, but EPI is manageable. Use the symptom checker on identifyepi.com and talk to your doctor. That's identifyepi.com. Sponsored by AbbVie.
Number one for breaking news for Vernon, Canton, and Rocky Hill. The Talk of Connecticut. AM 1360, FM 103.3.
It is 23 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock. Our guest is State Senator Dr. Jeff Gordon. We're just talking about the wokeness that's... we all have to endure. I can only imagine. When I was up there, I left in 2019, there was no wokeness. And I know that you've been outspoken on the Senate floor and in your role as a ranking senator on Veteran Affairs Committee, right?
Yes, that's one of the committees I'm proud to serve on, doing what we can for our veterans.
What's come out of the Veterans Affairs Committee that maybe some of our veteran listeners would like to be aware of?
Well, there's a number of things. Some people consider it technical type of revisions of law, where we're looking to see what we can do for, number one, the skills that our veterans have, especially those who are currently serving in the military and soon to be discharged, have developed in their training. How can we better allow that to be portable so they can work in the state with less hassle to get licensed, less of the fees? We want to make certain that those who are serving here in Connecticut, when they're out of the service, they can actually want to stay in Connecticut and not want to go to another state. So that's part of workforce development that we're actively trying to do. We're doing a number of bills that I hope will be passed this session to see what we can do for veterans and their families who already have federal benefits, but sometimes that is negatively counted against them when they want to apply for similar state benefits. And we don't want to have that.
Okay.
We want to be able to let them access all the full state benefits that they can,
right,
regardless of whatever Fed benefits they get.
I'm glad I asked. All right, now I want to switch gears a little bit because you represent Vernon. And if I remember correctly, Vernon has been in the news for starting a petition versus Eversource's proposed 19% rate increase. And that amounts to approximately $44 more per month. Talk about that.
Well, I've been talking about it for many months.
Yeah.
I've been out there talking about this, and recently I have. And I know that town government in Vernon, Mike Picaro, the administrator, Dan Champagne, the mayor, they have this petition that's going. And what I've been trying to let people know is this Eversource rate hike is due to previous decisions by the legislature. I wasn't in the legislature when these were decided. One of the examples is to support the Millstone nuclear power plant. Whether you agree with that or not, the state has to pay for it and let Eversource recoup some of its losses to support the nuclear power. Those bills have come due, and that's going to be hitting the ratepayers. And the other aspect that's coming due right now is how do we pay for the governor's executive orders during the pandemic to prevent shutoffs of electricity, put a moratorium on that. Now, you may say that that's a good, that was a good executive order. However, that also means that Eversource has to get its losses recouped by law, and that's another reason that this bill is coming due. So this isn't necessarily Eversource trying to make profit. This is actually due to state government policies that are now going to hit people during a time that we just learned last week, inflation is still stubbornly high, mm-hmm. and the cost of goods and services are still burdensome to families and businesses. And I want to let people know that they need to pay attention to what their state government does, because they end up having to pay the bills.
Yeah. All right. So as I'm running out of time here, obviously you serve on Public Health Committee. Are hospital consolidations, they're having a bad impact, at least in my opinion, on small rural hospital services. What's your opinion?
I think in general, consolidation hasn't been good. I've fought against it for years, but the reality is it's happened, and it's happening. And part of what I'm doing on public health is leading a charge with others in a bipartisan way to say we need to really review these types of consolidations as they move forward more and do what we can to protect all the needed services in our community hospitals, so that way these services don't go and people have to then travel into the cities, especially if they're sick and if it's in the winter with bad weather, that's not going to be good at all. So we're really trying to redouble our efforts to protect these services that people have come to need and what they expect to get in their own local area. And that's a big fight. Yep. And I'm happy to be one of the people leading the charge with others, such as Senator Summers and Senator Fazio, working with them.
Good. Okay. One last thing. Local control. That is a huge issue for Republicans statewide. Do you think Republicans can protect local control for yet another year?
I hope so. I've been advocating it for years and years, and we need to. And I think right now more and more people in their towns are realizing they're going to be losing local control when the Democrats want state government to take over. And I say this loud and clear, and people understand this. The people of Connecticut know best what's best for their towns. And I encourage your listeners to let their state reps and state senators know that. We don't want to lose our local rights.
Well, and it just seems that every legislative session, whether it's the 830G, we're just TPZs are losing more and more of their authority in town and being more or less circumvented by state government, usually bureaucrats who aren't even elected and have never even been in your town. But I stay on top of this. This show stays on top of it. And I hope that you continue to stay on top of it. Listen, Doc, I thank you for your time as always, my friend. Good luck with session. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thanks a lot. Have a good rest of the day.
You do the same. All right. Let's see here. Open phones. All of our lines are open on this Monday morning.
It is Gary Byron.
A lot going on as well. Stateside and
national. Hey, her name is Carolyn Fippen. She's known as the Mike Lee in a wig. Very boisterous on social media. She's running for U.S. People call her the Mike Lee in a wig. I think I was saying that a moment ago. Let's welcome to the show, Carolyn Fippen. Carolyn, good morning. Carolyn, good morning.
Good morning.
Ah, there you are. Good to hear you.
Yes, thank you so much for having me on.
I've been looking forward to this. I like this, what people are calling you here, the Mike Lee in a wig.
Yeah, and let me tell you, that started because some liberals hated my take on getting rid of the Department of Education. And they said, oh, look at this woman. She's absolutely awful. She's Mike Lee in a wig. And I said, really? I'll take that.
I was going to say.
I'll buy that website. And I'll use it.
I was right about to follow that up by saying, I hope you wear that like a badge of honor.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you, Mike loves it as well.
I want to talk about the seat that you're running for. Mitt Romney, a former presidential and Republican-endorsed candidate for president. In fact, he ran a couple of times. And once upon a time, he was a very, very popular Republican in the U.S. Senate. And it's only been maybe the last, 8 years or so that his popularity has waned. And is that what led him to choose not to run again?
Yeah, I can't say for sure why he made this choice, but what I do know is that there were only about 35% of Republicans, registered Republicans in Utah, who said that they wanted to vote for him again.
Mm.
So I think if I had access to those numbers, I think he did as well.
Yeah. Tell us about Utah. There's other issues I want to get to, but, kind of set the stage for us a little bit about Utah. There's very little that I know about it other than I know Salt Lake City is a pretty happening city, and there's a lot of Mormons in Utah. And of course, my buddy Donnie Osmond lives there. So that's about all I know.
Yeah. Oh, well, I'm going to give you a fact that most people don't know, and I'll tell you. I grew up in upstate New York, but I've lived in Utah 36 years, my entire adult life.
Mm-hmm.
But Utah has two-thirds of our land controlled by the federal government. It's a beautiful state, but the fact of the matter is we do not have control of the land within our borders.
Why?
We are significantly constrained in our growth as a result of that. And frankly, we're significantly constrained in our representation in Congress because of that.
Well, why does the federal government control two-thirds of the state's land?
So apparently this occurred with a number of different states, including some that are pretty eastern at this point when they were first founded. But they had an agreement with these states when they were formed that they would dispose of their lands over time. In 1976, Congress passed a law called FLPMA, F-L-P-M-A, and what they said is, we're done disposing of lands, and period. So you have states like Nevada. I think they are about 90% federally controlled. I don't call it federally owned, although the federal government thinks they own these lands. Well, and you have Utah with two-thirds. It's state after state in the West, and it's simply because the federal government said, you know what? We're not so keen on that agreement we made with you guys. We're going to be done.
What about your farmland? Who owns that? I keep hearing that, the plain states and the Midwestern states, a lot of the farmland is either owned by Bill Gates and he's closing them down, or China has come in and bought them. Is there any truth to the two of that, to either of those scenarios? And is there anything that that can be done about this, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think things can be done about it. I will tell you this. This is a point of pride for those of us who are members of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. But our church actually outbid Bill Gates on a massive swath of land. I want to say Washington area, maybe Washington State, a year or two ago. And so I think the largest landowner in the U.S. is the church, or it's close to it, farmland. So that makes me feel a lot better, because we do have a problem with our lands being owned by hostile foreign nations and by individuals who don't necessarily want to use them for productive use. And that's the problem. I'll tell you, that's the exact same problem we have with a lot of these lands controlled by the federal government, because we have, well, not a lot of our farmland here is owned by the feds and controlled by the feds. Grazing is. We have problems with the feds constantly pushing on ranchers so that their grazing right allotments are taken from them. This has been a consistent thing over the past few decades. And we also have the minerals that are so necessary for all of these modern conveniences that we have, that we're now pretty dependent on China for, are locked up in our public lands throughout the United States, many of them in Utah.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's interesting to know. You know, hey, there was a I was reading something that you had tweeted. There was a measles outbreak in Chicago, and then you tweeted that Biden got rid of Trump's border policies, and you know, here we are, and you hit the nail right on the head, actually. We're less safe, and Biden still refuses to do anything about it. But you're right. These people are not vetted. We don't know who they are. We don't even know what they're bringing in, what pre-existing medical conditions exist. You know, talk about that that tweet that you sent out.
Yeah. You know, this is a pretty simple thing, right? We would want to know who's entering our country, number one, because we ought to know if there are people who will respect our laws. Granted, when they're not respecting our laws currently, it's kind of hard to make the assumption that they will going forward. But let's say we want to know if they're decent, hardworking human beings, or if they're actually criminals, maybe who escaped from a Venezuelan prison or was released from one, like we're seeing all over the United States now. But we also have this issue of communicable diseases. And are we forgetting that just a few years ago, we had a government that said, if people are sick and if we're scared of a virus going around, everybody needs to be locked up in their homes and we'll shut down our entire economy. And yet they are allowing people to come in without any kind of health checks. That isn't how our country has operated in the past. Think about Ellis Island, right? We, any of us who've been there, probably most of your listenership, We know that we quarantined people coming into the country for a period of time to ensure that they weren't sick and wouldn't be adding all of various communicable diseases that didn't exist here at that time into the populace. This is absolute common sense, and we have an executive branch of our federal government refusing to do the very simple things that would protect the American people.
You know, you bring up some interesting points here. If the feds cannot safeguard the states from these unknowns, these illegals coming across the border, then what must the states do to safeguard itself?
Yeah. No, I think the states have to step up.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, we're really proud in Utah. This is sarcasm, by the way, that when the people called on our governor to help Governor Abbott down at the border, mm-hmm. we sent five UHP officers and five members of our National Guard. So we contributed 10 people. But our governor did get a lot of headlines for stepping up and sending National Guard to the border. He just didn't really disclose the numbers. So, yes, states need to take action, and we need to. I've seen some recent headlines where some states are starting to get creative about how they protect the people within their own states from what literally is an invasion.
Yeah, well, are you prepared? Or how should states prepare? I say this all the time, and I don't want to be Debbie Downer here, but I'm just trying to be realistic. I don't think it's a matter of if there's going to be a terrorist attack right here on our soil. It's a matter of when. And I think it'll take place, I don't know what day. I think it'll be prior to the election in November. I think they know that Biden is a weak president and that Trump, should he win, is much stronger, and it'll be a whole different ball game. And they're already here. And I think it'll all, there are sleeper cells in every state, actually, probably depending on the size of the state. Probably several in some states. And I think once right. they get the green light, it'll all happen simultaneously. That's my thought, though. You know, Carolyn, what's your thought on that?
Yeah, no, it's absolutely correct in my estimation. I think it's clear that we have, think about this. During the last election, or just prior to the last election for president in 2020, we had BLM and Antifa marching through our cities, burning them down and mm-hmm. creating havoc. We now not only have those two groups, but we know we have Chinese operatives in mm-hmm. this country. Mm-hmm. We know we have cartel members who certainly would love to have some plans of their own. And we know we have Middle Eastern terrorists. We saw that after the attacks on Israel, even in our own streets here. Do any of us think that things are going to be peaceful through this next summer? Yes, we all need to be prepared as much as we can. I'll tell you, I've started speaking with some of my own state elected officials to make sure that they have these thoughts in their own minds, because the fact of the matter is, if there is not quick crackdown when things get lawless very quickly, mm-hmm. then we'll see that lawlessness spread.
I think you're right. Switching gears a little bit, Trump says abortion should be decided by the states, will of the people. I think he came out with that statement about a week ago. And I know that you agree. You say that, I'm going to quote you here, states should decide. Utah has a trigger law in place that outlaws abortion with exceptions for a mother's life and rape and incest being held up in the courts. With a vast majority of abortions are prior to 15 weeks. So allowing the states to decide saves more babies' lives, end quote. Talk about that in our closing minutes here.
Yeah, so truly, I think if we pass national legislation for a 15-week ban, couple things. I think what we would see is more babies' lives lost. Number one, you'd see states like Utah walk away from the lawsuits that have been filed currently to fight for our right to actually save babies' lives. Mm-hmm. And I think within a few short years, you would see abortion up until birth, because as soon as the Democrats gain control, we as Republicans, if we go along with a federal law, we as Republicans have been supportive of that. As soon as the Democrats take control, they will obliterate it. States will have dropped their challenges. And like I said, I think we'll just have it right up until birth and even after, some of them have talked about at times.
This seems to be the go-to topic for Democrats year in and year out, regardless of if it's a presidential election. Even with Trump coming out and saying it's a state issue, the Democrats will still make it a national issue. How do you get around that?
Yeah, I'll tell you. I am asked by just about nobody about abortion when it comes to regular people on the ground, right? Mm. And you're exactly right. This is an issue being stirred up by the press and the left because they know that it gets their people scared and activated. And if we focus on the things that Americans are concerned about right now, Democrats lose. So the way we do it is by refocusing the conversation. And like I said, it almost never comes up with me.
Why is that?
Because I think that most Americans understand that, especially after this weekend, that the threats in the Middle East, the threat to world peace is significant right now, right? We're living in a very different world than we were under Donald Trump. Most Americans are suffering under this burden of inflation. Young people can't buy homes, and no one is not struggling to buy food and put food on the table.
Oh.
And everybody is seeing absolute disorder. Everyone around me is aware of what's happening at the southern border. This was not true a year ago, even though it's been going on for 3 years. But everybody in the past 6 months is becoming very conscious of it as they see more and more illegal aliens around them. They see the increase in crime, right?
Yep.
There are just realities that are undeniable to people on the ground.
I got to let you go, Carolyn. Where can people find out more information and donate if they'd like to? Really quick.
Yes, come on, MikeLeeInAWig.com. It'll take you to my website.
MikeLeeInAWig.com. All right, Carolyn Phippen, thanks for your time this morning. Good luck with your campaign.
Thank you so much.
You got it.
Thank you.
We have open phones next. All of our lines are open. Lots we've discussed this morning. I want to hear from you.
Fox News, I'm Chris Foster.